In May 1945, the U.S. military began a covert operation to recruit and hire Hitler scientists to develop rockets and other weaponry for the United States, despite the fact that many of them were accused of war crimes and some even stood trial at Nuremberg. The operation has remained one of the most closely guarded secrets of the post-war era. Annie Jacobson, an investigative reporter and former contributing editor to the Los Angeles Times, has written a book that details this program and brings new facts to light. It is called Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. It's published by Little Brown. I'm very pleased it has brought Annie Jacobson to our show. Hi.
Thanks for having me.
When the Allied forces entered Germany, didn't some of those German scientists, including Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger, turn themselves in? What did they hope would happen to them?
Those two turned themselves in. They knew American Allied intelligence was interested in rocketry, but others, for example, the biological weapons makers and the chemical weapons makers, they were really on the run. And the beginning of Operation Paperclip starts out like a cat and mouse game of us trying to find these scientists and then deciding, should we hang them or should we hire them?
And one, Otto Ambrose, particularly difficult to capture. Why?
Well, he was Hitler's favorite chemist. He got a million Reichsmarks bonus from Hitler himself for inventing synthetic rubber and also sarin gas. And I have a very strong feeling he knew that the Allies would, you know, send him to Nuremberg as they did. But first we got information from him about his scientific forbidden knowledge. And the great tragedy of Ambrose, of course, as I write in the book, is that he was tried and convicted at Nuremberg of mass murder and slavery. And then he was given clemency. And he came to be part of Operation Paperclip through a Department of Energy contract.
So he wound up working for the U.S. Department of Energy.
Just really an astonishing element of Operation Paperclip.
Now, explain Operation Paperclip. How was it established and why that name?
Yes, well, you know, at the end of the war, this is sort of before the Reich surrendered, Allied intelligence was very aware of the fact that Hitler had this incredible arsenal of weapons, and we were after them. And so as the forces moved across the continent toward Berlin and Munich, we had these little groups of scientific intelligence officers seeking out these different weapons. And Operation Paperclip as a name came a bit later, and after these scientists were all gathered up and put in this large castle called Kranzberg, where they were interrogated, the officers who were looking at them and investigating them were deciding who was going to be important to us. And lots of them were guilty of war crimes, and so they put these little paper clips just discreetly attached to the top of a file, indicating this is someone you want to look at.
Now, had most of them been members of the Nazi Party?
Well, I focus on 21 of the more nefarious fellows in my book. 15 of them were Nazi ideologues. 8 of them had actually worked side by side with Hitler, Goering, or Himmler during the war. So not only were they Nazi ideologues, they were ranking members, high-ranking members of the Third Reich.
What about Wernher von Braun?
Von Braun was an SS officer. And, you know, that little fact was kept from the American public for decades. And it's interesting to look at some of the documents that Nassau actually helped von Braun keep his past whitewashed. You know, they coached him, had him say when he would be asked, you know, is it true that you were a member of the Nazi Party? He would say, my past has been fully investigated by the U.S. Army, as it had. They just didn't reveal what the past was.
There was one scientist, Dr. Leopold Alexander, who exposed some of the others.
He's really the great hero of the book, I think. He was one of the medical officers who was sent at the end of the war to look into war crimes, to investigate them. And it's this very dramatic part of Paperclip where Dr. Alexander is seeking out these Nazi physicians to try to, you know, eventually hold them accountable at the doctor's trial. But at the same time, you've got physicians with the U.S. Army Air Forces trying to hire these doctors. And the way it all unfolds, I think, is incredibly dramatic. And sadly, some of them wind up in Texas working for the Air Force.
And some of them wound up in the Soviet Union. So how was it decided, or how was it determined that the U.S. would get this Nazi war criminal and the communists would get that Nazi war criminal?
Well, it was a race. I mean, you could really say on some level that the space race began in Germany in the ruins of the Reich. We were fighting the Soviets for them. And part of the way through Paperclip, the program shifted to what was called a denial program, where we were willing to take anyone, including the Surgeon General of the Third Reich.
Because, and people who'd worked in concentration camps.
Absolutely. But the fear was if the Soviets get them, then they'll know more.
Well, how much did the Joint Chiefs of Staff know right after the end of the war about the atrocities that had been committed by the Nazis? Isn't that something that came to light gradually? I mean, we knew that there were concentration camps. We knew certain things. But did they have any idea of just how awful some of these scientists were?
Absolutely. I mean, there are documents showing some of these military generals visiting the concentration camps weeks after liberation and writing reports back to the Pentagon saying, you know, this is just ghastly. And at the same time, having Operation Paperclip move ahead full steam.
Were there U.S. officials who were opposed to this operation or people in the Pentagon?
A limited number of officials. I would say more so at the State Department. But remember the time. This was like if you were against Paperclip, you could very well be accused of being a communist.
What about Harry Truman? Was he aware of this operation?
Yes. Truman authorized and supported Operation Paperclip. Although it was a classified military program, it had a public face. And Truman helped promote this fiction that it was a benign program.
But there must have been concern that the scientists' work would be discovered and then revealed.
There absolutely was, and that's why there was pretty much a large propaganda campaign by the administration to keep this program, the truth about it, a secret.
And they had to actually go around the normal background checks and immigration processes.
Yes, the FBI had to become complicit in all this.
My guest is Annie Jacobson. Her book, Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America. Many of the chemists worked on classified nerve agents programs in the United States. Had they done similar work in Germany?
Absolutely. I mean, Hitler's nerve agent program remains one of the great mysteries of the war. Why he didn't unleash those chemicals, no one really knows. But we certainly got a hold.
Because he wanted to burn down Paris. You would have thought he wouldn't have minded using chemical warfare.
Yeah, and the only argument is that he himself was gassed in World War I, and so he had this deep opposition to chemical weapons. But those chemists came to the United States most definitely and worked on our programs.
What kind of programs were we, what were we developing? There already was sarin gas, so what else?
The Nazis developed the sarin gas, but we had no idea how to make it. And we were actually having chemists in America right after the war try and reproduce sarin by reverse engineering it to no avail. And that is why we needed their scientists.
This program you write is still classified. How did you learn about it?
Well, parts of it are classified. I mean, big chunks of information are missing. For example, Otto Ambrose, we spoke of, who had that Department of Energy contract, he came to the United States 3 times. He was a convicted Nazi war criminal. The State Department had to give him special papers to come in here. According to the State Department and my Freedom of Information Act request, those files are either lost or missing.
Do we have any idea what he was working on here? Department of Energy can mean an awful lot of things.
It means a lot of things. And he was here. His sponsor was Dow Chemical. So you put those two together and you can kind of get an idea of what he was working on.
How did Richard Kuhn, who was one of Hitler's former chemists and a Nobel Prize winner, by the way, become involved in the development of LSD?
Well, he referred one of the military generals to LSD, so I don't know of his involvement in it per se, but he was, you know, they were all colleagues in this area, and Kuhn is a very complicated character because for a long time he was perceived as a great Nobel laureate, and now we really very much know that he was a Nazi ideologue and he was involved in some really dirty things during the war.
But you could be a great scientist and also be an awful person. Heisenberg, who is one of the most important figures in the history of physics, stayed in Germany and, as far as I know, was working on Germany's nuclear attempted to build an atomic bomb.
Absolutely. The real question of right versus wrong or crime versus not crime really comes down to, were you complicit in anything that was going on in the concentration camps?
Was this simply a matter of we had a Cold War going and if we didn't take them, the Soviet Union would?
That was certainly the premise, although it really wears thin when you realize and come to understand that the Soviets grabbed their own German scientists and ultimately didn't really use them. They were very, you know, prejudiced against Germans, but ultimately they sent their Germans back to Germany and they did perfectly well with their weapons arsenals.
If the Nazi scientists hadn't been recruited, do you think that would have affected the development of U.S. weapon systems or our space program?
You know, it's hard to say in retrospect, but I think, sadly, we didn't need the Nazi scientists. I mean, good science produces good science, and I think it was a shortcut.
What happened when the New York Times and the Washington Post revealed that some of these people had been war criminals? Was there a huge outcry?
Well, certain groups were outraged. Einstein appealed directly to President Truman himself. You know, Einstein said, I left Germany. I wasn't going to work under a raw and rabid mob of Nazi militia. That's what he called the Nazi Party.
Well, he couldn't have because he was Jewish. The Nazis got rid of some of the best scientists simply because they were Jewish.
Yes, and he left. But his argument, which I think I have to really adhere to, is that if you stayed in Nazi Germany and worked for Hitler, you were complicit.
Did any of these scientists do something that we would think was really great? Or were they pretty much doing the same sort of thing that they had been doing in Germany?
It's a great conundrum and a big question. I mean, Dr. Theodor Benziger, who mysteriously was released by the U.S. Army from Nuremberg, invented the ear thermometer. Does that excuse his crimes? I think I'll have to let the readers decide.
And then there are people who are concerned that some of the experiments that the Nazi scientists did on live humans reveal an awful lot of benefit to science. But do we want to use those results considering how they were attained?
Well, certainly not now after the Nuremberg trials, but that is why Nazi scientists moved so quickly ahead.
You write that at Camp King, a clandestine facility in occupied Germany, that it contained one of the most nefarious classified enhanced interrogation programs of the Cold War. Do we see any connection between that and what happened later at places like Guantanamo?
Well, from what I learned, Camp King is actually the very first black site in the post-war world. And that is where we used Nazi doctors and conducted interrogations using enhanced interrogation techniques.
Who were we interrogating?
Soviet bloc prisoners. So the person in charge of the facility, the physician, was actually the former Surgeon General of the Third Reich.
And were we doing things like waterboarding there?
Came across waterboarding, but we used drugs. The idea at the time was to sort of make these people talk by drugging them with street drugs and LSD. And the CIA and the Army and the Naval Intelligence were all involved in this program.
Some pretty heavyweight scientists came to the United States. Dr. Kurt Blom. He was Deputy Surgeon General of the Reich?
Blome never came to the United States. He was one of the ones. He was such a hot potato. He was on Himmler's personal staff. And so he actually worked for the U.S. Army at Camp King, which was in Heidelberg in Germany.
Annie Jacobson's eye-opening book, Operation Paperclip, the secret intelligence program that brought Nazi scientists to America, is published by Little Brown. She's a journalist and the author of the New York Times bestseller, Area 5. Thank you so much.